Why did these two, Nelson and Lamour, what did they have against the Greek? Why did they slice his throat ear to ear?
Well, the Greek had a liquor store in conjunction with the grocery store. And it was supposed to have, by law, two different entrances, outside entrances. The Greek had circumvented this just a little bit. He had the two outside entrances, but for a little after hours selling of booze, he had a small door, I guess about 3 feet high and 2 feet wide, cut between the grocery store and the liquor store, that he could get in the liquor store without going outdoors. And these two fellows had come after hours, and they wanted a pint of Four Roses, and they had indicated that they had the money, or showed him the money, and indicated that they was going to pay him off a bum check that he had accepted from them, knowing that they didn't have any money from some time before.
And it was like some of the bartenders nowadays, just take a check until you get, they get some money in the bank.
Right, which was absolutely worthless, but these two fellows were not knowledgeable. And he frightened him by telling him that he was going to turn in the bum check if they didn't pay off. Mm-hmm. And so they had two motives. One, to retrieve the bum check, or at least stop the business of going to jail over a bum check. And also, as long as they're going to do that, they just as well rob him. And it was common knowledge that he had a big quantity of dough around all the time on his person, and hid in the house. We found a lot afterwards, you know, in the store.
Approximately how old was the victim, the Greek?
Oh, I suppose he was 50-odd. He was a real big man. And in fact, this was a part of his undoing with the little door. They had wanted a bottle of Four Roses, and he had gone in the store, the liquor store, to get it, and they remained out in the grocery store part alongside the little door. And while he was getting the booze, one of them took a bottle of White Rock mix. There must be a fifth or maybe a little more. And he had to come through this little door in a real hunched down position, mm-hmm. and with his shoulders and hands pretty well close together, mm-hmm. to get through the narrow door. And when he was in that position, one roared the boom on him with the White Rock mix, and at least knocked him out. And then they both grabbed him, and they actually, as I said, cut the throat from ear to ear. The Greek was a strong man, not an awfully heavy fellow, but big and raw boned. And there was an ice cream freezer. There, you've seen them with the old-time ones with about four holes in the tops. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they had dropped him right alongside of that. And he was conscious, I'm sure, long enough to know what had happened. And he tried to hold his throat, and then had tried to get up. And he'd gotten his hands up on this freezer, but I don't think he never did regain his feet.
Yeah.
I remember the floor was kind of sunk there. It was an old building, and it was depressed, and blood was, I guess maybe half an inch thick over maybe a spot of floor that was 6 feet in diameter. And in fact, the assailants that murdered him had walked in this, and it had been certainly messy, and they even had blood on their clothes. He had splattered. I remember. It reminded me, it had apparently shot out.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever seen dehorned cattle, mm-hmm. it'll spray out mm-hmm. in a long spray. Well, that's the way it had come out so rapidly from his throat.
His blood got on there.
Oh, yeah. See, and one of them even had rubbers on, and it was even inside of his rubbers. Not that it had gone over the top, but somehow it had gotten inside. Mm-hmm. But, and of course,
evidence was pretty solid against those two.
Yeah.
They were both black.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they were.
And very few blacks.
Were black men?
Yeah, both of them were black men.
And very mm-hmm. few blacks in Juneau at that time. And probably was only three or four.
A few. Yeah. Jackson and Gene and Austin, and I think there was maybe another family.
No.
Yeah.
Population went down by 50%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After that, it
weeded them
out.
Were there
any hangings before that that you...
Not that I was aware of.
While you were there?
No, not that I know of.
How about up here when you were...
There's none up here. None up here during my time.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I just... Bob DeArmond sent me some notes on Jim's father. He just was a hop, skip, and a jump ahead of the news a couple of times.
Oh, is that right?
In the early days.
Oh, really?
In the 80s.
Yeah. Really?
I don't know. I've never read the accounts of it, but...
What, for shooting or something? Shooting incidents?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know the details of it. I would like to find out. But he was on trial for his life, and Juno was acquitted.
Oh, all right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I guess the victim was an Indian, so
mm-hmm.
wasn't. That's the way I got the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have to go research that someday.
Yeah, the Armony.
He's a valuable man to have around.
Man,
that man has so much information just in his head. You know, he can direct you to the right sources and.
Yeah.
Well, Jim's father came up in 1882, first time mm-hmm. to Alaska. And then he was in South, Sitka, Haines, Yakutat. Mm-hmm. And he came over the trail to into Dawson area,
mm-hmm.
over in Valdez.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we don't have any written, very much written on him.
That's a shame, isn't it?
So Bob DeArmond had sent me quite a few notes
mm-hmm.
on
him. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's good.
So it's a good start.
Well, every day the chances of gathering up some information goes down, like Mr. Creamer. He's getting quite feeble.
I talked to Charlie Creamer. He was at Dyea in 90. He went there in 96 and stayed there till 98. He was just a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, a young...
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember now exactly what his age is. I'd have to go back and check my notes. But he went into the... I talked to him last fall over at the Pioneer Home. And he didn't want to go down to the lounge. He
mm-hmm.
just wanted to go down where they sit near the dining room.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's pretty noisy there.
Mm-hmm.
And old Louis Black had to come by and flirt with me a little
mm-hmm.
bit. And it was pretty noisy. But Charlie just didn't want to... I guess he didn't want me to know he couldn't walk that far.
Oh, yeah.
His feet were pretty bad when he went in there.
Poor old fellow.
And... he just can't walk very far, and he's been such a big, strong man all his life.
That's
He refuses to sit in a wheelchair, get pushed around, So I didn't know that until afterwards. So I didn't press it. And there's a lot of noise on the tape, but at least I'll go back and talk to him. And I found a nice picture of his wife, Ann Creamer.
Mm-hmm.
I saved some old negatives the Newsminer was throwing out about 10 years ago.
Oh yeah.
And I saved them. I've been going through them, and I found. Anytime I run across anything like that, I save them. Give it to the people.
Mm-hmm. She was a horrible driver.
Was she?
Oh, terrible.
Don, their son, Don, he and another, I can't think of the other name of the other kid here. His first name was Don, too. But anyway, Don Creamer was one of the first arrests I made.
Is that
when
right?
I first come to Fairbanks for speeding and... And boy, everybody thought I was really it when I picked up those two fellas.
I remember one of my first arrests here. Go ahead, excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's
you.
It. But,
did it slow him down any?
Oh, yes, you bet. And everybody else, too, got out. And they got these two fellas, and boy, they thought that is the best thing that anybody could ever do.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
What's your first arrest?
Well, the first arrest in Fairbanks here. It was a speeding violation, of all things, Farmer's Loop. And it was 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. A fellow named Jay Bickle was connected with the radio station there and was going out there to the tower. And he and I were the only ones on the road. And he was perfectly sober, good equipment and everything, but it was in excess of the speed limit. So it wasn't even a gross violation, but I guess I had time on my hands. So I gave him a ticket. And it cost him $20, I later found out. Clint Stewart was the commissioner then, U.S. commissioner. And months later, I saw violations that were even worse than, much worse than what poor old Jay was doing, that I let loose. I just took the cream of the crop, you know. Then I'd wised up a little bit. And I felt badly. And I saw Jay downtown by the model, and he was not disgusted with me at all. He acknowledged that it was a violation, but he didn't even feel badly. But I told him that, I called him over and asked him if I could buy him a cup of coffee, and I told him I'd give him a chance to get his $20 back, a dime at a time. And we were friends.
He took it.
But I did feel badly. But
you know, to change the subject from your first arrest, but to go back to this murder in Juneau and the blood and the gore. Mm. When I worked for the News Miner one time, maybe you remember Larry Crackle, who was the photographer for the News Miner.
Yes.
Well, it was the summertime, and I think I was in there doing some work on our historical edition. It was on a Sunday. And I just stopped in to do something, and our boy and girl were kind of small, and so I wasn't, you know, working 7 days a week. But I had stopped in the paper that day, and Jim was home with George and Libby, and Larry heard the siren, or heard, I guess they have a police, had a police radio, or he had one in his car or something, and came running in for some film, and he said that there was a reported double murder and suicide on Badger Road. Did I want to go? And I said, sure. So I grabbed my coat and my camera and went with him. And it was out there off Badger Road, and some guy came home, and his wife had been seeing a GI on the side, and he had chased him off several times, but he wouldn't stay away, so he finally came. I guess the husband finally moved out, but he came back this one Sunday, and he shot her. He walked in the door and shot the guy. The GI was sitting in the chair with a cigarette in his hand. Shot him, and he just fell over, you know, and the cigarette just was still in his hand and it burned clear down to the skin. Mm-hmm. And went in the bedroom and shot her. He died immediately. She died.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went out on the steps and shot himself. Well, he didn't die immediately. He was, by the time I got there, Larry got there, he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
The ambulance had him. You know, we met the ambulance just as we were getting there. They were taken to the hospital. But I've often wondered about myself, because I went in there, and the police, by that time, state troopers were there, or the territorial police.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, it was state troopers then, because it was there. Anyway, it was after statehood. And they didn't want me to go in because it was a bad scene. And she hadn't died immediately. You could tell where she,
thrashed around
on the floor. And Larry went in and took pictures, and I was getting kind of tired of standing out there by myself. And finally, I was getting a little chilly, and so I said, do you mind if I step on the back porch? And they said, no, come on in. And the door was open, and this guy was just lying there, and the cigarette was burned clear down. I was just standing there looking.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, trooper, came over and closed the door. I guess he thought I was going to faint. And I didn't. And he says, that doesn't bother you, Mike? And I said, No, I mean, that's a dreadful thing, but I'm not going to faint or anything.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, if you want to come in and get warm, come on in. So I went in, stepped over this body, and waited until Larry was ready to leave, and went back. And I never had any, I've often wondered what was wrong with me, that I didn't react.
No, I don't think so.
Just the other day, a friend of mine was in Anchorage, and while visiting, The son of his friends there, they were playing outside in the street, and a manhole cover, they picked it up, and he let it fall down, and it fell down on his finger, and it chopped off the end of his finger. So this one other guy went out, and they took him to the hospital, and went out to try to find the end of the finger, and he went out and found the end of the finger, and then he just fainted, dead away.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Over.
Well, there's some people it just takes very little.
And I thought about that when he was telling me this. It wasn't this friend of mine who did it, but who fainted. It was someone there at the house. And I got to thinking about this double murder suicide, and I was, it didn't faze me a bit. I thought about it many times, and what a dreadful situation and how tragic it was, you know, that three lives were, the man died, the suicide victim died in the hospital a few hours later. But what tragic situations people get into. I've looked, you know, thought about it from that angle more than I had the blood and the guts and stuff.
Did you ever hear the story about the guy that just telling the story about like that there, about the GI going in there and he gets out and telling to a fellow and he said, kept saying, God, that's bad, but could have been worse. Bad, but could have been worse. How the hell could it have been any worse? Here's, he killed this GI going in there playing with this woman and two other. Well, he said, it had been the night before, it had been him.
Well, we seem to have quite a few shootings now. Do you recall any, Bob, when you were in Fairbanks, do you recall any bad crimes committed that you had to investigate? Any gory ones like that?
No, really not.
It was a pretty law-abiding town in those days.
Yeah, right.
Have you had any serious problems?
Well, no, not me.
No, I mean, ones that you've had to investigate, anything really gory?
I remember when I was transferred from Tok to Anchorage, of course, after being in Tok for 3.5 years and never being in Anchorage, you know, it was a big town to me. And I could barely find my way home from downtown in our apartment, practically, when we just moved in there. My first shift, I had a murder, and a suicide, and a highway death.
Holy smoke.
First night.
Wow.
Oh, what, I thought, my God, if it's going to be like this, I've
got
enough of this. Well, I didn't want to leave Tok in the first place. There's been...
When were you at Tok? What years, approximately?
Probably, I was here in town with Bob here for the first year, which was 49 to 50, and was in Tok in 51, 2, and 3, I guess, and then in Anchorage in 54 and 55, and then in Barrow 55 and 56. And then came on down to Fairbanks here in 57.
And you were in Fairbanks since?
Yes.
I got you ought to tell her about the raid that you made there when you were dressed up as you and Jerry Williams.
Well, which one?
On Anchorage. When you...
Oh.
No, that's a different time. The one...
Oh, I can
the
think
one
of
you
them.
Were the, dressed up and went out as a logger. Or a into a sporting house?
Yeah.
Dark colored district, wasn't it?
Yeah. But I was thinking of a funnier one. You remember Mr.
Couldn't have been any funnier than that.
Do you remember me? Oh, yes, it could. I damn near got crap kicked out of me that time.
Well, you don't have to get that
funny. Didn't think it was funny at all. I thought they were going to stomp me right into the ground. I didn't want to shoot anybody. But the funny one I'm thinking of was in Anchorage. I was working plain clothes then, and it was for narcotics. And it was down in the flats, Eastchester Flats, or Westchester Flats. And it was predominantly a colored area and a lot of booze joints and hook shops there. And do you remember Carpenter, the treasury agent?
Yeah,
what was his first name?
Glenn, wasn't it?
I know. No, it don't sound
no,
right.
No, it wasn't Glenn. But I was
a real fine little guy. Yeah. And would, he was just like a buzzsaw, you know. He didn't back down from anybody. But anyhow, he was the ramrod for this joint venture of city police, whatever we were then, state or territory, and the treasury agent. And we synchronized the watches. And I had told him what an artist I was in kicking in doors. And it was a bit of an exaggeration. It was wintertime, snow on the ground. And...
I can imagine what happened.
No, you can't. This was a hook shop, and it wasn't a very big building. And the door looked almost like a walk-in freezer door. It looked like it would offer that much resistance. So after I'd done all this bragging to him, I thought I'd best really perform, you know. So it was not just a small effort that I put into it. I backed up the appropriate thing to do or to legally get in was to knock, advise them who you were, and to open up. And if they didn't open up, then it was legally permissible to kick the door in. Well, we operated on a fairly small margin. The knocking was done by him, the advising him who it was, and the door was not opened immediately, which was my cue. And I backed up and I took a hell of a run at it, and I hit right at the lock, just above the lock, with my right foot. And I was practically airborne when I done so, thinking that it would resist that much. And good God, it must have been made like a cardboard door, because it was not. And I remember zooming through the air, and I fell flat on my ass, feet forward, and there was a linoleum there. And there was a colored lady, and she was not in my way, thank God, or I'd have knocked her down. But I remember she was just off the side of me, and I looked up as I skidded past, and she was looking down at me. And I hit the goddamn wall on the far side. Talk about lacking dignity. What an entrance. But she was absolutely, well, of course, you can imagine she'd be startled. She didn't know anything.
Maybe she was on the way to open the door.
It could have been, but she was late. But, God, I felt like an idiot. Another time I can remember, that was a raid, too, in Juneau. We had the chief's name was Leonard Williamson, and he was built just like an Atlas. And he was very sensitive. In fact, he would blush, he had some funny ideas. But anyhow, this was a gambling joint. And Turk was in on this deal, Mayfield. And this was another deal of synchronizing the watches, and we were going to hit it from all sides. And that was wintertime, too. And we broke the windows. And Williamson was in full uniform, you know. He looked like a Mexican general. And as I say, big as a house. And he jumped in. It amounted to a lobby. And there was a round oak table, and the fellows were gambling there, sitting around there, and the table had the dough on it. And he plowed through there, snow on his feet, and fell flat on his ass and come up and underneath this round table. Well, he was frustrated, and he didn't want to look like an idiot. When he got up, he lifted table and all with him. The guys had never tried to get away. They could do nothing but laugh. Oh, he was squelched much more than they for whatever fine they ever got out of it. I laughed.
Well, Jesus, and the other one where you went sailing through the door, did you find any narcotics in that raid?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember what heroin, I think. It seems to me it was in an oatmeal container. I suppose there was more there, but we never did find any more. It wasn't a great quantity, as I remember.
But the most comical one, that, as far as I can remember, is when you and another fellow went out to the sporting house, come in as a couple of trappers with your parka and your goulash, not goulashes, but
Chupacs
yeah, on. That tell her about
that. Tell me about that one. Can we tell that one?
Oh, yeah. This was a joint adventure, too. The city police in Anchorage and a territorial police and military police also.
No, there's only two of you.
I know, but they were a part of this crime squad that we had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But a city police and myself were supposed to pose as live ones and go into a bar and be picked up. The hookers were working out of this bar. So we sit down at the table, and I think I bought beer with 20. We were furnished the money, even. It was marked money. And left the change on the table while we had our drink, and of course a couple of them, gals came wandering over to the table. Honey, would you buy us a drink? Oh, sure, we'll buy a drink, you know, easy come, easy go. And we had our drink, and they asked us if we wanted to have a good time. And for evidence, that wasn't sufficient. So, you know, big farmers had to pursue it. Well, what do you mean, good time? Finally, they told us. They were quite sure we were rubes for sure then. And they had the car, and were going to take us to, oh, they took us 2 or 3 miles. Well, the department had a couple of vehicles, plain unmarked ones. They were supposed to follow us. Well, somehow in the traffic.
They lost you.
Christ, yes. So we got to the hook shop. We went on in. My city police buddy and his girlfriend went in. They were both black, too, the girls. My buddy and his girlfriend went into a bedroom someplace, left me with this big, heavy-set gal out front. And I was reluctant to begin shedding clothes. She began to shed clothes right away quick. And I was waiting for my buddies, the idiots, to come. Good God, they didn't come. They didn't come. I stalled, unbuttoned the shirt 2 or 3 times. Jesus. Finally, I...
Well, she was nude at that time.
Oh, yeah. Just like a jaybird, yes. And I finally told her. I thought, Christ, our people aren't here. I've got to arrest her now. And if I have to walk her back up here or catch a cab or whatever the hell I have to do, I'm sure as hell not going to go to bed with her to get evidence. So I told her who I was and showed her my badge. And no, I didn't have on shoe packs. I had
no, not shoe packs.
Overshoes.
Yeah.
Because I'd slipped my gun in the overshoe because I know their goddamn habit of feeling in the pockets and either looking for dough or other identification, police identification. So I told her just to slip on her coat. She, of course, didn't want to go. Well, I couldn't dress her, and I had no intentions of it. So she had on a winter coat, or had a winter coat. I said, just put on the goddamn coat, we're going. Well, she put on the coat, didn't button it. And we walked out, this was wintertime too, walked out the front steps, and there was a barbecue joint just a little ways away, oh, half a block. And there were a number of people there, all blacks too. And she started to run. And from behind, I grabbed a coat collar, and she didn't have the damn coat buttoned. So she left me standing with the goddamn coat in my hand, and she took off just like a turkey, hollering, rape, 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 the top of her voice. And of course she got radio assistance. They seemed like there was some prejudice in that day too. They knew damn well that I was in the wrong, and they were all blacks, and they were going to stomp me right into goddamn ground. And I was looking for help from my partner, the one in the house. And he had seen, it turned out, had seen what was going on and didn't want to get the crap stomped out of him. So he took off. He got canned for it. Chief Miller, who's now dead. He was later chief in Ketchikan, another fine man. And I didn't want to kill the bastards. And I finally got them talked out of it. And one of them tried to kick me.
What, did you have your gun by that
groin
time?
No, I didn't. I didn't pull my gun out at all. I convinced them then that they were wrong. In the meantime, the car that was supposed to have been following us did show up when they saw this little gathering here where it was going to work me over. And they took after my girlfriend that had left me holding the coat. And I believe Turk was in the lead on the thing, and it was dark, you know, and this gal was running through a garden and apparently run under a clothesline. Turk didn't see the clothesline, got caught in the garden. What a deal.
What a deal. You didn't get yourself killed, too.
Yeah, well. And my partner, the city police officer, let the hooker roll him for his marked money, for Christ's sake. Yeah, I think it was two or three 20s that he'd been given. Oh, he got his ass.
Did she roll him for him?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he'd all undressed. What an idiot.
Wow. Well, not to change the subject from happy hookers, but how about wildlife, other wildlife, like bears? Did you ever have to, you ever have any run-ins with bears on your...
No.
Ever have to go shoot any for...
No. I can think of a...
On duty, that is.
Yeah, I know. I can think of a kind of a humorous deal with moose. I mean, I don't think I ever killed any bears for marauding or bothering anybody. Down when I was stationed in Anchorage that time. That was winter too. Snow up to your butt. And there was a car hit a moose on this side of Anchorage, 20 miles I guess. And the moose had gotten into the brush. And I had another officer with me, Vince Chellis. And he was not a hunter or much of a gunman. And I didn't show very good brains, or I would have gone and got the rifle or a shotgun. But I went out there with the damn revolver, which is a poor killer to begin with. And we waited out there in the snow, off the highway, probably 100 yards or so. And I was ahead of him. And he was willing to let me be the senior officer, which I was. And supposed to be a hunter too, you know, and he never claimed to be one. The damn moose was up on his feet, and I guess it must have been 50, 60 feet off, or away from me, and it was dark, as black as the inside of a goat. Vince was holding the flashlight kind of from behind me, and trying to get the moose so I could see the sights too. And I remember, as I say, snow up to your butt, so you couldn't run. Well, at this distance, you don't have too much leeway with a moose. And it looked like the moose was fairly healthy enough to... I had a little crap in my neck. And I shot with my gun, and I emptied the goddamn thing, and I asked Vince for his gun, so he didn't even have a gun if the moose had to come after us. And you couldn't run in that stuff. I finally got the moose down.
Did you ever have any close calls with bears?
No, never have. No.
I always like to ask people that, because some of the most astounding bear stories.
Yeah, there's been.
You live out in the bush, yeah. Mostly.
We have got a man that's got an authentic story, and he's not a liar. He's not an exaggerant. And if you want a bear story, it was with a grizzly that got him. And his name is Dave Arend. And he's with the department now.
No.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another fellow, Harold Strandberg. He should be able to.
Yeah.
He had, two brothers that was killed by bear?
One.
Or one? Just one? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that
up
was
in the mining.
Yeah. That bear was on the body, and I don't know who did shoot that bear when they went back. He had devoured a portion of it.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
Yeah.
But Dave Arend.
And he's on the force here in Fairbanks?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And as I say, it would be real good because he's very accurate and not don't exaggerate. And it was a damn close call, as I can remember the way he told me. He had been dropped off by airplane at a point that he was going to walk to some other location. The airplane was supposed to come back for him in about 3 days, as I can remember. That could be incorrect. And he was supposed to have taken this walk and gotten back to the point at which he'd been dropped off. Well, he had just, as I can recall, had started in a ways, and he saw the bear, and it was quite a little ways away, as I recall. And he had a gun, but he didn't want to shoot it. And the bear had a cub, or maybe two cubs. The bear wolfed, and I think he tried to back away, and the bear charged. And I don't know whether he fired. He may have fired while the bear was charging, but it didn't affect the locomotion of the bear if he did hit it. The bear knocked him down and was chewing on him, pretty well over his around his face and chest, as I can remember. And he still had his gun, and I believe the bear was chewing on his foot or walked around his feet, and he was able to get the gun up in such a position that he shot the bear and If I remember, the bear may have even fallen on a portion of him that he had.
No.
And the plane wasn't due back in for another couple of days, and he remained there and recovered. That is, I say he later recovered. But talk about mental anguish.
Yeah,
holy smoke. Newt Peterson on the Toke Cutoff down by Solana would be another one. He had a bear charge, absolutely unprovoked. It got a good deal of part of his scalp. He wears a old silk stocking cap over his head yet.
Well, back to you, Bob. Do you live in Juneau all the time now? Do you go out in wintertime?
We have been. We've done a lot of traveling. But this last winter, the only trip we made last winter was down the Mackenzie.
That's right. Last summer.
Yeah, last fall.
Oh, last fall.
Yeah, last fall.
Did he tell you about that?
Mm-hmm. Quite a wonderful trip.
Yeah, that's
then we were out this winter for a little over 3 weeks in Portland.
Excuse me.
Seattle and Portland, outside that. But previous winters, we've always taken quite an extensive trip.
Well, tell me a little bit about Governor Parks. Does he get, your neighbor there in Juneau, in the McKinnon Apartments, does he get out at all anymore?
Not anymore. Not anymore. He used to get out, at least couple times a week and go down to the hotel for dinner, and he'd always take Pearl Peterson there and probably somebody else and go down there. Got around pretty good then, but now I would say it's 4 or 5 months now at least that he hasn't been able to get out at all. As far as he can get now is go out in the hallway and gets a little exercise up and down the hallway, but that's all.
Yeah.
I go down and see him every day or two
and
talk with him.
Yeah, he told me he was 91 or almost 91.
Right.
And I talked to Charlie Skuse
from
the igloo down there.
And you know Charlie. And
George, I don't really know him, but I just...
Charlie and George both would be good ones to talk to.
I know, but they're, again, reluctant.
Oh, Charlie wouldn't be. George would.
More reserved. I went up and visited with them Sunday there in Juneau, and after I got, when I walked in, they remembered me, and Charlie's wife remembered me. But you have to, like I call him on the phone.
I wish I'd known you were going down, because I know him so well, I would call him and told him.
Well, we wrapped along there pretty well, and real nice people.
And Isabel, met her too,
But, they forget, I hadn't met George before, but I met Charlie and his wife at the Juneau Convention, and I saw them both in Palmer too, this last year at the Pioneer Convention. So, I had a nice visit with them, but they're like a lot of the, some of those. George came there in 96 when he was about 7 months old. And Charlie was born in, I guess he was born in Juneau.
Yeah, he was born in Juneau.
We're not old-timers.
No, that's the way I feel about myself. I'm not an old-timer. I'm just...
They lived there in Juneau through the time, an important period of Juneau life.
George and I were hunting partners.
Were you?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And he used to take Tommy Stewart oftentimes, too. Who's now a Superior Court judge down here.
I think Sim McKinnon should be a good one for you.
I'm going to go down and...
I mentioned him to you.
I wished I had more time this last trip down, but before the Pioneer Convention in October, I'm going to try to go a few days early and go through Juneau, just stop over there. And maybe now that I've gone down and made some contacts, though I've met some of these people before, you have to kind of go warm them up a little bit.
Emmett Matello would be awfully good because he's so accurate, and again, no exaggeration or no fabrication.
I talked to him for only about an hour, is all.
Is that right?
But I'd sure like to talk to him some more. It's just regrettable that Governor Parks wouldn't
talk
before. Is there anybody whom he would know well enough or trust? Just to get some of his recollections on
tape. He would, Sim.
Sim McKinnon.
Yeah, Sim McKinnon would be your intermediate.
In fact, Sim McKinnon goes up and sees him every, at least once a week, too.
Yeah.
And he and his wife both. Mm-hmm. But,
well, maybe I'll write to him. And it's just, you know, I don't want to force him
to do anything
he doesn't want to do. But it's stress, just, he has such an extraordinary background.
Yeah. Stress the importance of it.
Yeah.
Really.
He's been failing all the last few months. Of course,
that's what I understand.
A lot of people wouldn't recognize, but I do. Yeah. Going down and see him every day, every other day. But,
well, it's really nice that you do that, because a lot of people in Juneau don't even know he's living there.
Yeah.
And he was governor for 8 years.
Yeah. He has an awful lot of company.
Does he?
Oh, yes. He has a lot of company. And we have him up for dinner every now and then. And then we have some things that he likes. We'll take it down to him, too.
Yeah. He said he has a housekeeper who takes very good care
of
him.
An old Finn woman.
Uh-huh.
She's very good.
Someone at the Pioneer meeting the other night, I think, was telling me that, is it Florence Oakes who used to be his secretary?
No.
Not Florence?
No, Florence Oakes was never his secretary. You mean Parks the secretary?
Yeah.
No. I was going to say Pearl Peterson, but she was secretary to Heinzelman when he was in the Forest Service. But I don't know who his secretary was.
Yeah. Well, you know Florence.
Oh, yeah,
Florence
I know
Oaks
Florence Oaks,
Juneau.
Yeah. She wasn't up the other night, was she?
No. She wasn't. I don't know whether she lives here part of the time, in Juneau part of the time, or what.
No, she lives here all the time now.
Oh, she does?
That's what I understand, yeah.
Well, she doesn't come to the Pioneer meetings very
often. Oh, is that right?
Well, depends. You know, sometimes they'll come for a while, and then they are out for the winter. And
Walt was telling me that Weisslein was up there the other night, but boy, I didn't recognize him at all.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't come to me too.
He was always busy talking to somebody. He's a very popular guy.
Yeah.
He's on the visiting committee and the trustees and everything. He does a lot of work for the
I'm sorry I missed him.
He was the president last year. And a good president. You know,
Very good.
Yeah.
He's such a likable person, especially the real old timers. He really makes them feel at home.
Old Charlie Skuse down there, secretary, he's a card.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. He's a sharp old boy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about Clara Rust? She should be able to give you some.
Oh, yeah, I've been talking with Clara.
Yeah.
Oh, she's got a marvelous
memory
for.
Is Dorothy King still out there?
No, she moved to Seattle.
Oh, did she?
Who? Well,
Dorothy King.
Oh,
George
I know she. Yeah, she moved out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's a talkative old girl.
Maybe she'll be up. There's a group of them coming to Sitka from outside at the same time the Pioneers are meeting.
You know, Clara Rust, before she was kind of crippled up, it's hard for her to get around. For a heavy woman, she used to be one of the finest waltz gal that I've ever danced with.
Is
for a heavy set woman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's a beautiful dancer.
Yeah, she's had a marvelous life here.
She
has been active. She's she's almost 84. I think it's May 3rd.
84,
or 2nd. It's her birthday.
I read her article all the time in the paper. Yeah.
And she has bad arthritis in her, especially in her left leg.
George Beck would be an excellent one to talk to, and he is a wonderful trapper, or used to be a wonderful trapper.
Is he
over
an eagle?
That's his home, but...
Yeah, I talked to him last...
Did you?
Visited with him, and...
He's a fine man. And
he lives in Eagle now. He's retired over there.
Oh, good. I'll have to see
him. George Beck used to be an operating engineer. Right.
In
construction.
Right, he was up in Barrow, in Barnard.
Yeah, I got him. Talk to him.
He should have some remarkable trapping experiences.
Yeah, but he's pretty close-mouthed about it. You have to kind of live around Eagle for a while.
Well, I know him well enough, but I should go with you.
Yeah, somebody like you could get in there and really get him to talk to you.
Yeah. And again, there would be no exaggeration, and his was all dogs, of course, trapping.
Oh, yeah, he had some marvelous
and a tremendous trap line, and excellent.
Well, you know, Mrs. Coyle, Adriana Coyle, she and I flew over there to Eagle.
Oh.
And she wanted to go. We were going to try to go over there when we came back from Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to come back to town because of something that happened. And so then we decided, well, rather than drive all the way over there, we'd fly.
Because
you don't need a car in Eagle.
No. I was a first patrol car. I was a first patrol car to get to, over that road.
Is that right?
Yeah, to Eagle.
Mm-hmm. To Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
Did Emma tell you about the trip we made up to Dawson? And when they had the, well, in the opening.
Yeah, when they opened the road.
Opened the highway there.
Yeah, go ahead.
And we're going along there. There's two or three patrol cars.
Yeah, I was.
And Emmett was in one of them.
You were going from where, Whitehorse?
No, from Tok.
Oh, to Tok, over there.
I think Emmett had his own car, didn't he?
Emmett and Lubke were together.
Yeah, Emmett
and Al Lubke.
Al Lubke. Well, anyway,
Lubke was stationed in Haines at that time.
They stopped at one of the mining areas where they had the flume and mm-hmm. whatnot down right off the highway.
It belonged to a fellow named Stampy.
Yeah.
He was a wild man.
And I don't know, was Emmett and Lubke both went down there, you know, just nosing around, wasn't just looking at it. Because there were a whole bunch of us, and this guy showed up and he pulled a gun on him.
Oh, dear.
I guess they were very fortunate that this screwball, as everybody thought it
no,
was.
No, I talked him out about it. He was...
Oh, is that what it was?
Right. I didn't talk him out about not shooting him, because I wasn't there.
Yeah.
But he was insisting on pressing charges, you know.
Yeah, that's what it was. Right.
Robbing his sluice box.
He went right down to... down to the commissioner, down at Tok.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, I talked him out of it.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Because I kind of knew him. But he was really wild. He was wild. And I think in later years he had a mental disorder.
Yeah, right.
That they even confined him.
Yeah.
But he was hypersensitive at that time, I'll tell you.
Yeah, have you ever talked to Emmett again? Why ask him about that? And how about that?
Don't do it if you want Emmett to talk, because he was embarrassed, you know.
Yeah.
Law enforcement officer.
He'll tell it.
Charged with robbing sluice boxes, of course, which he was not, but that was Stampy. I can't remember Stampy's first name.
Was that, do you know George Robinson?
Oh, yeah, George, a real fine man. He could tell you lots of stories.
Oh, we stopped in there on the way back to
Dawson.
He's
been sniping there for years.
Yeah, he's the longest resident there. He lived there forever.
Mm-hmm. He got a great big nugget one time. A monstrous big one. Mm-hmm. I don't know. How many ounces it was.
He and Al Lyle were very close friends.
Yeah. No, he's a real fine man.
Yeah. Well, he's still up there, too, isn't he?
Yeah.
I saw him in Tok in January when I was down there. He came in. He was on his way outside, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But when we stopped over there in August, well, Mrs. Coyle, of course, knew him, and we went up the cabin, and we had to come in. Mosquitoes were kind of bad outside. Had to go in. And he started talking, and he never stopped.
Yep.
Till we got in the car and drove off.
Right.
He was still talking.
Right. And every bit of it was truth. You could believe it.
Yeah, I guess
so. Mm-hmm. But I know him.
He was a little bit mad about the environmentalists, as I recall.
Oh, I'm sure that they would, haven't they riled most of us up a little bit.
I forget what else he was screaming about, but he was plenty riled up.
Yeah.
Well, are there people on the state trooper force now who worked with you here?
Oh, heck, there's a number of them that hired.
I
hired Emory Chapel and what's his name before him? Personette. And
Emory Chapel, now he just resigned. He
just resigned, right. And then.
How about Ralph Schaefer? Who's the.
Ralph Schaefer.
He's the.
Yeah, I hired him.
Man here.
Yeah.
In fact, he lived in our house here in Fairbanks for one. So did Judge Hip.
Mm-hmm.
No, not Hip. Your boss, Ted Stevens.
Ted Stevens.
Yeah, he lived in our house for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You still have property here in town?
No, not here. We have a homestead up on the Live and Good Road.
I see. 160 acres?
Mm-hmm.
Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it.
That's right.
Why?
Land's hard to, you can't get acquire land now unless you buy it.
No,
you can't
I know.
Homestead. You can't
I,
get
no,
a,
I know
can't
that.
Even go mm-hmm. out and file on a home site.
Well, I don't know, it's worth $100 an acre maybe if you're lucky.
And then some.
And then some, you bet. People are land.
Oh,
yeah, I know.
seller's market now.
That's right. How many acres do you have where you're at?
Well, we started out with about 30, and then we sold a big chunk to Wagamans.
That's right.
And I didn't want to sell any, but I knew they'd build a nice place. Mm-hmm. They're good.
Where's your place?
Well, you know where the Yankovich farm is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, we're just this side of it.
Oh, yeah.
Up on top of the ridge.
Mm-hmm.
It's about halfway between the muskox farm and the golf course. Yeah.
There is a nice place, beautiful place. And Bill Waterman is also
What's Waterman doing now?
I'm not sure what he ever did. he's up to. He's involved with Usabelli coal sales. Yeah.
He's wheeling, dealing oil. And
yeah, he's been playing the oil
game here. I think North even North minerals.
He does a lot of lobbying back in Washington for different outfits.
He's got an application in for the Pioneers. They read it the other night. And for occupation, minor.
Yeah.
I didn't know that he'd
ever... Has he been here 30 years?
Must have been. But he made application.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he came up during the World War II as an officer.
Well, he was an
Air
officer out here.
Then came back, probably.
That could be.
Because you don't have to... Some of them have been up here when they were kids and came back and lived for a couple of years, and they
class themselves as bona fide.
But you can't do that anymore.
Not anymore.
Well, they got to be 30 contiguous years, don't they?
Right.
Or at least 30 years of residence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm a steam heat pioneer, Jim calls me, because I've only lived here 25 years. The women can join the auxiliaries on their husband's membership. Mm-hmm. So that's how I joined.
Donna isn't 30, but she made application and was accepted here.
Well, she did it on yours. Yeah. Yeah, because I was there the night she was initiated.
Yeah, yeah.
She was initiated with Carl and Gladys Parker's
daughters. Right, there are two of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's Donna's last name?
Kneeland, K-N-E-E-L-A-N-D.
Kneeland. I just couldn't remember it the other day. I took pictures of her.
Yeah,
baby
the little kid.
The little kid.
Yep.
What about, what was his name, McQueen? Don McQueen?
Don McQueen.
I heard that he was nominated or suggested as deputy commissioner.
I'd heard a rumor
that
he might be going to Juneau, but it was only a rumor.
Yeah, I just wondered about that. I haven't seen him. He was transferred out of here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's in Anchorage at the present time. Yeah, I'd heard the same thing.
Well, tell me about the Pioneers in Sipka, or in Juneau, Bob. Do they meet twice a month and have beer and sandwiches after everything?
No beer and sandwiches. They have sandwiches. They have, in fact,
beer?
No beer.
We'll never go down there. No,
no beer, no drawings either. But they have lunch every evening. They set up, bring in the folding tables and set up...
Regular sit-down dinner?
Yeah. Always, every
How
night.
How come they've got all these blue nose laws, or no beer, no drawing?
I don't know. No beer, no drawings.
More religious than we are, I guess.
Yeah.
They meet once a month, then?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Last Friday of the month. Mm-hmm. I've only been in there 2 or 3 years.
You're just a chichaco.
That's right. Well.
Yeah. Well, I remember you were helping on the, when we had the Pioneer Convention in June.
Yeah, I was chairman of the Transportation Committee.
That was kind of, it was a nice place to meet, but it was right across that, what do they call that, Outer Drive? They were building that.
Yeah,
it was kind of
sloppy down there.
Yeah.
Muddy.
But we had a good time.
Yeah.
Always have a good time at
I think
conventions.
Everybody did, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think I better close up shop here and let you people go if you're going to meet. Well, where did I see that clock?
Up here.
There's
no big.
I got to go back to the office and write some letters.
Do you really?
I don't have to, but I've got to get them out.
We probably didn't give you very much.
No, not a hell of a lot, I don't think.
Well, I got a couple of good, interesting stories out of you about going through the hook shop, going through the door, chasing that poor naked black lady.
Yeah.
Shocking.
Yeah.
When I was with the city police in Juneau, the hook shops ran with our blessings. In fact, we'd go down and advise them each week to go up and see the doctor and make sure that they'd gotten their certificate. And they were all very good. In fact, we controlled. We wouldn't let one girl operate a house alone for a safety reason. Better if there's two of them there. But they would check in with us first. You might say we played the role of a pimp, so to speak. We determined who was there and who couldn't be there. It had an advantage. It didn't have any rollings, and seemed that everybody was happy. Once a month, they'd come in. The girls would come in, pay their fine, disorderly conduct, $25. Judge Holzheiser was a judge. So, as I say,
one of the FBI, boy, I don't remember which one it was here now. They had had something that they wanted some information or something out of the apartment of Thompson that that was killed out
George
here on
Thompson.
The highway, George Thompson,
yeah.
In the apartment. And they knew that George had went out in the States somewhere, went out of town, and we wanted to go in the apartment and search it for, I don't remember even what it was for anymore. But anyway, the FBI and I went in there and got the pass key from the manager. And we, in fact, we went to two or three different rooms in the apartment, finally went in the bed. Here there's a man and woman in bed. Boy, did we get out of there. And George found out afterwards when he got back, he mentioned it. That's wasn't any, not another word said about it. Not a thing.
Were you sure that wasn't Jack Hayes, the FBI man?
No, it
wasn't. You remember Jack?
Yeah, I remember Jack Hayes, but it wasn't Jack, no.
What do you think with pipeline? What do you think is going to happen in crime in Alaska? Do you look either one of you look for a big?
You're going to have some.
Yes,
you're going to have some.
I rather think probably not the pipeline people themselves, but it's the ones that will follow the pipeline that were no damn good in the States, and they come up here, and they're not going to be hired for one reason or another. They're going to be laying rounds around here, and some of them are sharpies coming up here. Even premeditating easy money up here, and there's going to be jillions of dollars, I'm sure.
And there's no means of livelihood. They're going to do anything.
And they're going to be.
They're going to be
3,000 miles from home, and they think that
anything goes,
and I think it's going to cause a tremendous amount of problems.
There's no question about it.
That here, worries me. I've got a 17-year-old daughter. And
that's right.
Our house is unattended part of the time.
I've got a burglar alarm.
Do you?
Yes.
I've been talking to Flora Wagaman about getting one.
Let me send you my buddy over to talk to you.
Okay,
he's
you
not unreasonable, and he's absolutely honest, and he knows what the hell he's doing.
That's a good idea.
Demonstrate this to her.
Yeah, I can do that.
We've been seriously talking about this.
Oh, that's
can you hook it into Loomis or...
No, it can't be done there unless you want to go thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, and that's beyond his ability anyhow. No.
Well, his name Fairbanks is, Security advertises some kind of security thing.
Yeah. This but boy's name is Joe Katanik, and he's an electrician. He's working at Eielson, but he does this in spare time now. And, in fact, I can give you his phone number. He lives up on Clary Summit, and...
What's it operate on? Electronic eye or?
Mm-hmm. That's KATANIC.
Okay.
And to contact him, you go through Fairbanks Radio, which is 452-1166, and ask for Unit 14. and I'll tell you to demonstrate. I'll ask you to move in a minute. Because I'll show you first.